The Bhagavad Gita is a book of mankind's collected experience of and answers to life's most basic questions. Who I am? From where do I come? What is my purpose and destiny? And most practically, how do I find happiness? Unlike a car with its user's manual, we are born without instructions how to live. We experience life vicissitudes without a so-called user's manual. The Gita has been described as such a guide. These podcasts originate in the lectures of Neil Bhatt, a disciple of Swami Chinmayananda, which he has been delivering for more than 25 years. They are presented here in 20 to 30 minute segments, each covering three of the Gita's 701 verses. Welcome to Gita Wisdom for Daily Living.
We had been discussing Chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga, Yoga of Meditation. And in this chapter, we had been discussing the type, the method, and why to meditate. What is dhyana and why it is important? We are coming to the conclusion of this chapter. So let's quickly review what we have learned from this chapter. The first thing we have seen is that Bhagavan said that raise yourself by yourself. Uddharat atmana atmanaha. Raise yourself by yourself. There is no other person in this world who will be able to raise myself. If I am hungry, I have to eat. Somebody can provide food, somebody can tell me what is good, what is not good for me, but in the end, I have to eat myself to satisfy my hunger. See, in the same manner, Bhagavan says that if you want to raise yourself out of these limitations which you are experiencing in life, which creates sorrows and unhappiness, you have to raise yourself out of this situation and help yourself. So the first advice is help yourself. And why that is? That self is our only friend and the self alone is our only enemy. I may complain all day why other people are bringing me down, but in the end, when I analyze, it's me alone who is in the path of my own evolution or betterment. So, make yourself your friend to help you raise yourself out of this limited attachment to body, mind, and intellect. So, how do I make myself my friend and not let it become my enemy? Bhagavan said, one who conquers the self is his friend. One who has a control over his mind and intellect, the internal instrument, and the senses, for such a person the self becomes his friend. And therefore, he will be able to raise himself out of this limitedness and take himself or herself to the state where there will be happiness and joy only. A state of bliss. A state of bliss can only be achieved if there is no duality. As long as there is a duality, there is limitedness. Because I exist and the world exists. As long as I and world two exist as separate entities, there will be competition. And this competition, sometimes I will win, sometimes I will lose. When I'll win, I'll be happy. When I lose, I'll be unhappy. So this duality must go away. for me to be infinitely happy. And to raise myself out of this duality, I need the help of myself. To raise myself out of this duality to reach singularity. So, Bhagavan said, one who conquers the self, self is his friend. If I control my mind and intellect and senses, self will be my friend. To let me realize this oneness of myself and yourself and his self and herself. And that I can only achieve by practicing yoga, practicing meditation, practicing contemplation. So Bhagavan said, why one should practice this contemplation or meditation? For the purification of the self. The only purpose you will be doing this is for purifying my internal instrument, Antaratma, the mind and intellect instrument, like software in this hardware which is body. As long as my software is functioning fine, then only I will achieve what I want to get out of my computer. Just the hardware being so good is not going to be of any help if the software is corrupted. So in my case right now, my body may be healthy, my body may be functioning well, but my mind and intellect are corrupted by virus. The virus of attachment, virus of no control over where my mind goes and where my senses go. So Bhagavan says, practice yoga just for the purification of your mind. Just like you run your virus scan time and again to make sure that the software is not corrupted, I need to perform this contemplation and meditation to make my internal instrument, mind and intellect, free of all the impurities in terms of attachment, desire, anger, and greed. So, practice yoga for the purification of the self. Now that we have this advice from Lord Krishna that you must purify your mind and intellect, we need to know how to do it. So, we have seen in this chapter a detailed instruction about how to do it. First it says, find a place which is most conducive, that which is not too high, not too low. Well, I found a place and also found a time to meditate, but unless I have a moderation in my life, in my eating, in my receiving any sense information from this world, if I have no moderation, then I will not be able to focus on this. So, yukta ahara vihara, moderate intake and moderate activities. Intake from all the senses, from my mouth, from my eyes, from my ears, from my touch. All the senses should be behaving moderately in this world. As a living being, I have to interact with this world, but my interaction should be moderate. So, yukta ahara vihara. I have to make my life disciplined so that my mind will be ready for contemplation when I sit down at the seat of meditation. Well, next thing it says, what should I be doing? First thing is, focus your mind for the one goal on the thought, who am I? What is the nature of myself? And for that, various instructions. I can meditate on a mantra, meditate on a deity, meditate on the Om. But the point is to reduce the activities of my mind, so it's not running in a various different direction, but gather its strength in one point, in one channel, so it will have a strength to uplift myself from this state to the next. So focus your mind. And then obviously the doubt. My mind by very nature is fickle. It's wandering away. And Bhagavan said, your goal as a meditator is to bring that mind when it wanders away in a very friendly way and say, come back. This is what we are doing. We are contemplating on this thought. Don't run away into something which is mundane of what am I going to do tomorrow and who is going to do what. Because mind is the nature where it jumps from one connection to another. Swamiji used to say, I sit down and try to chant Rama Rama and I'm actually trying to remember Lord Rama, but then I remember the Ramachandran, my friend, and then suddenly the Rama to Ramachandran to Ramachandran, what he did last week, and then how I was mad at him because he did not do this, and I don't know what I'm going to do with him. Mind runs away. Mind runs away completely into a different channel, which I did not intend to do when I sit down at the seat of the meditation. So Bhagavan said, as many times, as the mind wanders away, watch it like a loving parent who brings the child back to where he wants or she wants the child to do. So bring that mind in a very friendly manner, not to be the enemy of the mind, but a friend of the mind, and say, this is what we should be doing at this time. Bring it back to the seat of meditation. Focus on the thought. So we have now the technique, the goal of meditation, and how to meditate. And then obviously Arjuna has the question, but what happens? How do you think this mind, which is so powerful and the senses are so powerful, that one can bring that mind under control? It seemed that it may not be possible. For an average person, that seems like a goal unachievable. And Bhagavan said, it can only be done. It can be done. And it can only be done by abhyasena, by constant practice. Practicing the control of this mind over and over and over again, that one can do it. And by dispassion, by vairagyena, by dispassion, by constantly becoming detached from this world of objects. Does not mean I don't engage in it, but constantly reminding myself while I'm working in this world that all these relationships, all these activities, all these experiences are limited and bound by time and space. They are not permanent, no matter how great an experience it is or how great an achievement it is, they are not permanent. Constantly reminding myself, I will be working in this world, but in a detached manner. So Bhagavan says two techniques, two pointers, how to control this mind. One, by constant practice of meditation, and second, by constantly reminding the fickleness, the fallacy of this world, that there is nothing here which is permanent, and creating this vairagya, detachment from this world, will make you achieve this control over the mind, which will let you experience the oneness of the self with every manifestation which we see in this world. Yourself, myself, herself, itself, in the trees, in the garden, in the buildings, we see just His manifestation. He only exists. We are just seeing various manifestations of Him all around us. And Bhagavan said, that is your goal, is to reach that state where there is no duality. Once there is no duality, there is no source of sorrow. So you will achieve that final goal. And the last few verses which we have discussed, Arjuna's doubt was, what happens if I run out of time in this life? What will be my situation? Or that yogi's situation, Bhagavan says, your efforts in this path of meditation will never go in vain. Whatever the actions you have performed in this life to control your mind will make your mind that much stronger. And even if you may not have achieved this goal at this time, till you die, in the next life you will be given the most conducive environment, and you will continue from there till you achieve perfection. So, the last two verses of this chapter, the concluding verses, says, tapasvi bhyo adhiko yogihi, jnani bhyo api mato adhikaha, karmibhyascha adhiko yogi, tasmat yogi bhava Arjuna. Bhagavan now gives a comparison of the various paths available to me, or various paths people pursue to achieve this perfection. What is this perfection? Where there is infinite happiness, where there is no sorrow, where there is no limitedness, where there is no unhappiness. That state of perfection can be achieved or may be pursued in various ways. First of all, some people will say, by tapas, by self-disciplining my body, that I can achieve this. That's where we have this fasting, you know, I will only eat one time a day, or I will only eat a certain type of food, or I will see how long can I stay hungry and without food. All these type of, you know, practices in Hinduism as well as in other religions are called austerities, as a tapas. And the person who is pursuing is called tapasvi. That's why we have these pictures about somebody, you know, and we have stories about that he performed tapas for many, many thousand years, or many hundred years, without even taking a grain of a food in his mouth. That's a physical tapas. And Bhagavan says, tapasvibhyo adhikaha yogi. Yogi who is performing or pursuing this path of meditation to realize his self is greater than that tapasvi, is better than that tapasvi. The result the tapasvi will get, yogi will get much better results in achieving his goal of perfection. Okay, the next is jnanihi. Jnanibhyo api mataha adhikaha. In my opinion, even the yogi is greater than a jnani. Jnani, one who is a knowledgeable, one who has studied scriptures, understood the knowledge, the declaration of truth in the scriptures. Such a person is a jnani. And Bhagavan said, one who has performed meditation and become yogi is better than a jnani. Jnani has the same goal. He wants to perfect himself by knowledge. And the yogi has the same goal of perfecting himself to a point that there is no unhappiness. He is one with the self. Bhagavan says, in my opinion, the yogi is better than a jnani. Then there is one more path and say, karmibhyah cha adhikah yogi. Third path in this world we have seen is, somebody says, I only believe in actions. So I will be performing actions, do good and be good, and that's my path. And Bhagavan said, even the karmibhyah, somebody is performing the actions in this world selflessly, is a karma yogi. Somebody is performing, you know, his dedication, upasana, to the God, well, then he is a karmi. Then Bhagavan said, karmibhya cha adhikah yogi, tasmat yogi bhava arjuna. Yogi is greater than even that karmi, karma yogi. So, one who is performing this meditation, one who is pursuing the path of meditation, who becomes a yogi. And the definition of the yogi we have seen in this chapter is one who has renounced all thoughts of this limited self and not attached to the sense objects and also the actions. One who has completely detached himself from all the sense objects, his own actions, and renounce all thoughts about his limited self. In other words, once one whose ego has completely melted, the sense of agency is completely dissolved into the thought of the self, he is the yogi. And such a person is greater than a tapasvi, gnani, or a karmi. And therefore Bhagavan gives a very loving and compassionate advice to Arjuna, said, tatasmat yogi bhava Arjuna. Therefore, O my dear Arjuna, become yogi. Pursue a path where you will lose yourself into the greater self. Now, the next verse, the last verse in this chapter, is obviously the concluding verse, and therefore it also gives you the indication of what we will be discussing in the next chapter. So this is like a mantra type of a verse, which kind of puts all the essence of the next chapter into one verse. In the tradition of our scriptures, when you move on from one subject to the another, before you end this subject, you give an indication of what the next subject is going to be. So, in this last verse, Bhagavan says, even among the yogis, we have seen there are all different types of yogis. Whatever you contemplate upon, that's what you become. Whatever you meditate upon, that's what you become. Therefore, you can be karma yogi, gnana yogi, bhakti yogi. So Bhagavan says, yoginam api sarvesham, madgatena antaratmana, sraddhavan bhajate yomam, same yukta tamo mataha. We have seen that compared to the tapasvi and a gnani and a karmi, yogi certainly is higher than that. Higher in a sense, he achieves the much better results in his pursuit of perfection than the other people would. Now, among the yogi, among the meditators and contemplators who are trying to achieve perfection, who will achieve the highest level of perfection? Yoginam apim sarvesham. Among all the yogis who are pursuing the path of yoga, to detach themselves from the sense objects and detach themselves from their actions, one who madgatena antaratmana, one who has become one with me. Sraddhavan bhajate yo mam. One who is devoted to me by his self, and who is bhajati, who is doing my bhajan, you know, with faith, sraddhavan, with faith. Yomam samayakta tamo mataha. In my opinion, he is the greatest of all the yogis. But it almost sounds like, you know, self-serving statement by Bhagavan. But what it means is that if I am contemplating on a particular aspect of the Lord, then I'll achieve that. If I'm contemplating to achieve certain siddhi, then I'll achieve that. But the one who is contemplating on the self, to become one with the self, will be following this path with a faith, then my happiness lies in realizing my ultimate self. Drop all the identification with this limited self, the body, mind and intellect. Will devote myself completely to the supreme self. So I have offered my ego, my identification with my limited self by my internal antaratma, by my inner self. I offer myself with faith and devote myself to the Supreme Self. I will become one with that Supreme Self. And Bhagavan said, yukta tamo mataha. In this Vedic tradition, Bhagavan does not say, this is it. It says, in my opinion, he is the greatest of the yogi who offer his limited self to the Supreme Self. He will become one with the Supreme Self, and therefore he is the greatest yogi. With this, we complete chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga, Yoga of Meditation.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina. Sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschid dukha bhag bhavet. Om shantihi, shantihi, shantihi. Harihi Om. Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.